happening with your businesses and to give your input. I know it's been a tough time living through COVID and now through tariffs and all of the economic uncertainty that brings with it. And I wanted to come here today to hear from all of you as small business owners how it's impacting you, so I can help take that story back to Washington, D.C. with me as we try to get Congress to take control of tariffs back from the president. We can do that. It's going to take the votes to do that, but I wanted your stories to help. For those of you who don't know, my dad was a small business owner in Bothell when I was growing up, so I grew up stocking shelves and, you know, working the cash register, sweeping the floors, and I know how important it is that we keep our small businesses alive. So I wanted to be here today to hear from all of you about what the impacts are and to understand personally from all of you what is happening for you and your businesses. We need to keep you going. So thank you, and looking forward to your input. And Don, I think you're going to start out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for being here again. This neighborhood is a very special place in Seattle, and it's actually an intersection of how all these federal policies are coming together and they impact one community. We have a major research university here that has impacts to their grants. We have spending freezes that don't allow people to come to the neighborhood and spend their money on, you know, staff lunches, that kind of thing. And then we have people who are trying to struggle to get their supplies and their stuff from all over the neighborhood. We are one of the fastest growing neighborhoods in Seattle, and so it's really interesting to see how all that change comes through a neighborhood like this, where we have 160 restaurants. And so it's a really interesting, diverse community.
You have how many restaurants?
160. And that's over 350 ground floor businesses that are impacted by some of the things we're talking about today. I would just say that you know, one of the things that we wanted to thank you for is some of the federal funding that came through during the pandemic that allowed us to have a really deep impact on small business. We gave $5 million in grants out. We're able to touch 140 businesses, and we do facades and lighting and signage, and a lot of the folks who benefited from that are here today. So just wanted to thank you for that. I think with that, I'll stop, and I'll just pass it to our host here, Chris, who's the owner of Cafe Allegro.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for hosting us.
Yes, welcome, Senator Murray, and all the guests here. My name is Chris Peterson. I owned this business for the last 40 years. I'm actually co-owner here. And we're in our 50th year as a small business in this neighborhood. We like a lot of people, have been touched by the recent government policy changes since the new administration came in. And they've had a direct and harmful impact on our business already. People think that there's a delay in implementation of tariffs when they come in, but we've experienced firsthand increases in our coffee prices immediately. It's not based on what the brokers and importers paid for the coffee when they brought it in. It's based on what it's cost them to replace it. So those, even just the threat of tariffs was enough to get them to raise prices on us immediately. And so, you know, we've been already paying for that. It's disrupted our supply situation in many, many ways. In addition to bringing in green coffee, we also depend on trade for equipment, packaging, and other things. And that's been disrupted as well because people can't count on the supply chain, and a lot of vendors have already decided not to carry things that they might have in the past. So we're having to find alternatives for those things.
Give me an example.
Well, so we get coffee bags, and our typical coffee bags come from China. And our vendor is not stocking it. They're not selling it, you know. And so we have to come up with replacement packaging. There are other suppliers, different countries, and also some domestic suppliers, but it's quite a bit different in terms of cost for us. It's much more expensive to source, and we have to pass those costs on to consumers. And so tariffs, to me, are just basically a direct tax on us. They're a direct tax on consumers. Green coffee is a great example of something that shouldn't be tariffed.
What do you mean by green coffee?
Green coffee is how it comes in raw before it's roasted.
And you roast it, okay.
Yeah, so all these bags here are green coffee. And so we don't produce domestic green coffee, so we're not, it's not like a tariff is going to onshore any kind of jobs. We're not going to be growing it, and so we have to get it from somewhere. So it really doesn't make any sense for it to be tariffed. So the other thing that we've experienced is directly is the government agencies that support us, like the IRS and SBA, and the downsizing of those organizations has had a huge impact on us. I can't get any help at the IRS these days in terms of even the most simple things for compliance. You can't talk to anybody, you can't get any help resolving situations, and so we're putting a lot of energy and effort into trying to do that.
So nobody answers your questions?
Nobody answers the phone, nobody answers emails. I get repeated letters that say we're going to have to take 90 more days in order to address your issue, you need to research more. And the only reason they need to research more is because they don't have anybody to help you. And so that is a real direct impact on small businesses like us. So, and I really appreciate you being here and being an advocate for small business.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Lois Koh. I own Sweet Alchemy Ice Creamery. We started off here in the U District, where I was actually a student for a while going to UW, and now have expanded. We have four locations all over Seattle and Bellevue. And I feel like for me, I mean, there are a lot of concerns, but to boil it down to three. picking back up on the tariff, so Seattle City is putting a ban on plastic spoons and utensils soon. It's, I think it's in June, isn't it? Compostable cutlery, a lot of them comes from China. And I've been trying to bulk order as much as I can, but, and I've actually taken loans out to bulk order from the companies like Willcentric and Veggieware and all those companies that are set up in China, and they don't even give me pricing anymore. Like, you have to call the individual broker to get pricing, and every week it's like 7% increase. And like, we do have a small alternative in Seattle. The composting company that takes our compost does make it, but it's really still very high price. Like, they haven't been able to bring the price down, and it's one source versus eight we've had as international shopping internationally. So, and with the new ordinances coming in, we are going to be fined now if we don't use compostable cutlery, which we can only get from overseas readily. So that puts us in a bit of a pinch and a bind. And once all the local people start buying from the local composting company, then the supplies, which only gives us international options that are getting tariffed weekly.
So can you not buy it from China right now? Or the price is
no, the price, I can still buy it. I'm now shopping around all eight of them, trying to get the best pricing. And then I get I'm like, oh, the person I talked with last week, let me go back to them, and now they're 7% higher than they were the week before. Yeah. So,
have you had to raise prices?
I am still eating the cost, because, you know, my single scoop of ice cream is still at $5. My triple scoop of ice cream is now $12. And I don't know how much higher I can go.
Have you had to raise prices?
We raised before the tariffs came in. I mean, one of the problems is we couldn't make any plan for this price increase, and so we had recently raised, so doing it again is not going to be well received by our customers.
I raised mine last November in preparation for the minimum wage going up. And we raised everything about 50 cents, which is like about 5% increase than it was before, which we thought would pan out. Because not everyone is getting minimum wage, so, you know. But,
You weren't expecting this.
We weren't expecting this, and also our technical calculations and real world happening always doesn't pan out. In fact, we've had a really not great February, and we've had to hire people to bring on 43,000 students, herbal licensing though is great, but also it doesn't compensate for it. And, like, we're still trying to dig ourselves out of winter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's one of my supply chain issues. The other is we've had some catering inquiries that canceled on us that were from UW because they had hiring, they had a spending freeze. And we're kind of like, we do get quite a few catering inquiries coming closer to graduation season, so we're kind of hoping that this graduation season is not gonna be impacted so much, but we know it probably will be. Because we're a college town and a lot of our foot traffic is dependent on UW people spending their money. Yeah, and also on similar note, a lot of people who I hire who stay on with me for years, they usually stay, if they have a gap year after college, they always stay. And they love working summers at our shop, but a lot of them are going back home and a lot of them are international students and they're choosing to not stay here to find a job, they're choosing to go back home. And I've had 3 out of 5 people who are graduating who are going to go back home because of that, those issues, yeah. So those are some of the things that
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam and Murray. I'm Trevor Pearson, University Bookstore. Bookstore is not part of the university. We're formed as a corporate trust to serve the students, faculty, and staff. We're celebrating our 125th anniversary and proudly have been on the Ave in our current home for 100 years. Tariffs are a big concern. Almost everything we offer will probably be affected by tariffs. One area I want to bring up in particular, though, that is the most financial challenge of the university students. The university is educating more and more first-generation students, many with very, very limited financial means. And we believe, and the university believes, that they should be able to wear their school colors proudly. So we've been working directly with the university for 2 years, creating lines of Husky clothing that are very inexpensive, value-driven, specifically for, so that any student of any financial means can afford that. Tariffs would upend that a lot. So that's just one example of, you know, the hitting the most vulnerable, the hardest.
So you're talking about clothing. So where does it come from?
It comes, well, all over. You know, much of clothing comes from many, many countries all over the world. And now the marks, the UW marks may be put on here in the States, but yeah, it's the blanks are sourced from, you know, Mexico, China, Vietnam, you know, you name it.
So Trump keeps saying that by doing this, he's going to create the manufacturing here. So are there any manufacturers here in the United States at all?
There are some. So like our plan is to, you know, fill in with some of those other manufacturers. But like if the customers come in and say, you know, they love their brands. I want Adidas. I want Champion, Lululemon or whatever. Like they'll be, you know, we have a limited ability if they don't have factories here.
And the cost, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My name is Yasuaki Saito. I own a UW-based business called St. Fred down on the waterfront. I also have a couple other restaurant, food and hospitality shops in Seattle at large. And like the rest of the panel here, thank you for being here and listening to us. There's a few things that I'd like to discuss and maybe some anecdotes to go with and to support them. One is the general fear of uncertainty that almost everybody's feeling. To Trevor's point, there's a lot of people that don't have the means to be able to weather this uncertainty, whether that be because they have no financial means, no family money, no whatever that looks like. And so there's a lot of people out there that are fearful of what it looks like in 3 months' time, 6 months' time. And to Chris's point, we don't wait that long to feel the pinch. You know, there's things that immediately, the first time the tariffs were increased, some of our vendors sent us an email saying, you're going to receive a 10% increase in costs. We're doing that for the time being. What we found with a lot of these increases in pricing over the course of the pandemic and otherwise, is they don't return to pre-pandemic levels or pre-tariff levels. They're just an increase, and then that's what you have to deal with. And so for us also, uncertainty, how do you plan? What do you do when you have a single profit margin business and everything you buy is 10% more than it used to be, 7% more week over week. There's no real way for us to assuage that. And oftentimes, as small business owners, we're asked to fill in the gap between what happens in a larger societal situation and then what happens on the ground level. So Chris and Lois, I know, said something along the lines of, well, I've had to eat that cost, or I've had to figure out a way to do that, or I don't want to increase it because it prices somebody out of being able to experience these things. And so for us as a small business community, we're always looking like, how do I make donations? How do I help fund things like the U-District Food Bank? How do I do things that are actually community focused? And we're filling in this gap now, and that gap just keeps getting bigger. And so, again, the problem of the tariffs, the problems of these things creating this fear, people are gonna, in 3 months' time, 6 months' time, spend less. They're gonna say, I don't know what happens. Maybe he's going to rescind them, maybe he's going to increase them to 185 from 145, whatever that number looks like. And so I think that a lot of the fear drives what happens on our ground floor levels, on our the situations that we have to deal with on a regular basis. Second thing is, with that feeling of community-driven business, which all of us have to be involved with, right? Because we don't rely on corporate sponsorships, we don't rely on these big things. What we do rely on, though, is the UW. UW is a huge part of our daily lives. It's the only thing that got me and St. Fred through the pandemic. The first 18 months, we just hemorrhaged money, but the only people that came were UW Medical Center employees, people from the STEM School Research Labs. They kept giving me hope to be able to keep moving forward. Now that we're a little bit more sustainable with business, we still have single profit margins, and now I'm talking to scientists, an anecdote, a woman named Mariah, she has a small lab, and she's like, well, in 3 months' time, my funding's most likely gonna be... She's like, in 3 months' time, my funding's gonna go away, they're not going to write me a new grant, or if they don't write a new grant, they're not gonna fund that new grant. So she and her family are looking to move to Florida to work for a private organization that would be able to continue doing her work. But then you're talking about somebody who comes and sees us 3 times a week, maybe spends $5 a time, whatever, but you start bringing all those people out, whether that be because you don't have funding anymore, because your job got lost, your lab is no longer funded, the education mechanism is no longer functioning the way it once did, you're talking about a pretty significant thing. I don't make it. I don't know who else at this table makes it if the UW goes 20% less, 30% less.
All of their grants and research.
Exactly. And so I think there's a lot of and this is the other thing that I think is so challenging for small business owners. I'm thinking about this all the time. Everybody at this table is thinking about this all the time, but there's no solution. What impact can I have on international geopolitical tariffs? Not much, right? And so what can I do in my community to keep pushing forward, keep saying, hey, I'm gonna be here as long as I possibly can. I mortgage my home. If I lose that, okay. But I'm not giving up on it, but what is it that we can do? And I think one of the things we're all here to talk to you about, what can you do? Because you probably have a little bit more impact, not the most, right?
I yell in the right place.
Exactly. Yes, you say, wait a second, this it's not acceptable to me, right? But for us, we just have to keep doing this work here. And so whatever we can do as a small business community to do that, we're going to. We're always supporting each other. It's great. I feel so grateful to be a part of this small business community. But I think that we're going to need a ton of help. And it's going to need to be help that happens now and also happens in 3 months and happens in 6 months and help that happens until the end of this term, whatever that looks like. And all those things are still so uncertain and so far out. But for us, it's really important to get the help now and to understand that we've already been doing this now for, to your point, 4 or 5 years of just trying to just get by, right? Not I'm not winning, right? I'm lucky I got some sustainability in one of the businesses, but otherwise it's what happens? So those are the two things I want to talk about.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thanks for being here. So I'll primarily talk about the auto industry. So I'm a Washington State Auto Dealers Association board member. Some of you may know Vicki Fabre is our executive vice president. So this administration is having a really devastating negative impact on the auto industry, which is very high revenue, but very low profit margins. It's forced us to reduce our workforce because in everything we're doing, we're being negatively impacted. this idea that we're making America great again is, I don't know what America we are making great, because the auto industry, the president talks about the domestic auto brands, they're not domestic auto brands. The Chrysler, Dodge, that's Stellantis, that's an Italian and French company. It's not even an American company. The content in Ford and General Motors vehicles, a lot of it comes from all parts of the world. Being a Volkswagen Audi dealer, we are tremendously impacted by the fact that our auto manufacturers are now holding cars on the other side of the border. Inflation.
Why do Canada?
Canada, well, they're all mostly sitting out in ships. And in Mexico. We have Volkswagen and Audi products built in Mexico that are being staged behind the border waiting. And what's happening is on the Volkswagen side of our business, when I last saw Sheena, I said it was off 50%. It's more than 80%. The Audi business is interesting in that, you know, these are sister companies, but we're humming along because that buyer recognizes that the price increase that is looming is significant. And so what we're facing there is selling out of our inventory. Now, let's go back a few years to the pandemic, which drove, and the way that administration then handled things, causing a supply chain issue that's never been resolved. Now to say that we're gonna, you know, make it in America, it takes an auto manufacturer 5 years to build a factory. So this idea that we're gonna invest and create jobs here, it's costing jobs, is what it's doing. It's just having a devastating impact. Used car prices by the day. We have very precise data that tells us what to pay for a car. And let's just say you're supposed to pay 100% of whatever that price is. Each day it can change as much as 5%. Going up, it's not going down. So affordability.
This is used cars too.
This is new and used cars are both being driven by a supply and demand situation. Mm-hmm. So like I say, on one hand, I've got a bunch of Volkswagen sitting there that nobody will buy because that buyer has no confidence in their future. Whereas you have go upscale to Audi and they're buying them as fast as they can, because they realize, if I don't buy it now, I'm probably gonna pay a whole bunch more. But this is happening so fast within our industry, which is all across this country. The recovery of this is, again, is gonna be, we're calling it COVID 2.0. It's driving up the prices, it's reducing the supply, and it's just making the affordability of vehicles nearly impossible for a lot of people. Now, take that to, you keep your car, and I'm gonna keep my car, so I'm gonna maintain my car. Every part, everything we're doing, the price is being driven up. There is no auto manufacturer that has a 25% profit margin. So the idea of a 25% tariff, you're talking about, long-term auto companies having discussions about going bankrupt to try and absorb these tariffs. It's devastating. This idea that, you know, it's creating this highly profitable business, it's devastating.
Yeah, so this idea of we're gonna manufacture all the cars in the US is just an impossible dream?
It's a global industry, yeah. And we all rely on each other. Ford relies on Fiat, and then you've got the Chinese brands that are emerging. It's an international market, and to think that now we're going to, make the American car company strong. It's two of them, really. I mean, you can count the third one, I guess. But the content of these cars is from foreign countries. So, you're talking about tariffs that can be as much as 50%. By the time you add everything up, it's not sustainable.
And you have a customer base that is increasingly concerned about the economy and not buying.
Correct. I have to add this too. I brought it up the last time. My wife is a nurse at a UW hospital, Valley in Renton. They have had to lay off
150 people, and their forecast is to go out of business because of the lack of funding. A hospital, a major hospital, says everywhere I turn, we're running into all of this administration. It's just, it's not sustainable. It's devastating.
Thank you for that.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Anson Nguyen. I'm with Historic Construction and Development. We're a small family-owned business, development, general contracting, property management. So we specialize in a lot of the student housing around the U District. I grew up in the U District. We've been doing this for over 30 years. Since we build and manage these projects ourselves, we closely work with the suppliers and the subcontractors. As soon as Trump announced initial tariffs, they basically jumped up their prices, trying to mitigate their an offset in potential costs down the road that would be incurred later. These increases were anywhere from 4 to 25%, basically starting from March or so. And they continue to creep up right now as we order product. So when you have a project that costs anywhere from 10, 15 million and more, they increase material costs. These increases can add up and then basically put us into negative returns for the full project. So this means anywhere from like 400,000 to 1.5 million increases across the project duration. So even if we pivot to domestic manufacturers, the raw materials for these still increases. So for those domestic manufacturers. Being a local developer, we're also following the mandatory housing affordability zoning requirements by the City of Seattle. And so we're providing affordable housing units for the neighborhood. The increase in material costs make it harder for us to provide the affordable housing needs. And so you'll see market rates, market rents rise as all landlords try to recoup these costs. So the pressure from both the city and the market is just making it very hard for these projects to start and finish. Another issue we face as property owners is the issue with insurance premiums spiking and even policies becoming ineligible to be reinstated. So despite our buildings, they're pretty safe from environmental fires and having no losses claimed in decades. Companies like Farmers Insurance and others, they judge buildings similarly to ours, to those in like California and other regions that may be more at risk. So these increase in the premiums across the board, even though nothing has changed on our ends, they're affecting us. So we believe that there should be more of a separation in insurance budgets and policies from state to state. And lastly, we very much appreciate the continued support for the LID I-5 North project. The initiative for that through federal funding, I think this long-term vision project will bring much life and vibrancy and economic stability to this area. So there are very few community spaces left in the area, and I think this project will bring the North Seattle area together.
Yeah. Right. We're following the funding on that.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Pantos. I'm the director of the Neighborhood Farmers Markets here in Seattle. And we are a not-for-profit, and our role, our mission, is around strengthening and supporting Washington State farmers, food producers, even ready-to-eat, processed and prepared foods. Lois is actually one of the vendors in our markets as well.
Yes, we don't. We source a lot of things from farmers.
Yep. And you underscored it perfectly. There's a lot of connection, and even we work with 150 local producers who are here in Washington. They are growing food in Washington for regional food systems and for Washingtonians. And even this local food production is similar to the auto industry, really reliant on global supply chains. And so I think the full effect of tariffs is, remains to be seen, but it's deeply concerning to a lot of the growers that we're working with.
Because those growers have to buy product.
Exactly.
Whether it's fertilizer, chains or equipment or anything, that price goes up, so.
Exactly. I was talking with a farm located down in Rochester, Kersop Farm, and they source all of their animal feed from a local supplier here in Washington. But that local supplier sources from the global market, so things like grain, soy, all of those costs, even because of uncertainty and the sort of the threat of increasing costs, are starting to increase, starting to not be transparent, not be named. And that cost gets passed through to the farmer, to the food production, to the distributor, and ultimately to the customer. And so I think similarly, you know, to other folks at the table, farmers are absorbing all they can, but they're absorbing it from all directions. And another grower I was talking to, a rancher out in Kittitas, Matt, who's a co-parent of a single dad of three, and he's, you know, raising sheeps and sheep, hogs, livestock out in Kittitas, the parts for all of his vehicles, all of his trailers, just to be able to maintain transportation as a producer who's selling directly into consumer markets, not global supply chains, not wholesale markets, the costs of parts, the costs of labor, if he's not doing it himself, all of those things are increasing, and that goes into the cost of food at the end of the day. It's deeply concerning, and I think a lot of growers are, you know, looking at their total operation and saying, what does it look like to cash in and either, you know, get the equity out of the land, sell it to someone who's going to hold it for financial gains over the long term. They're seriously considering those things, but not wanting to, and I think doing all that they can to really make it work. And farmers are excellent crisis managers, but it's really, it's become highly unsustainable and highly unpredictable. The second issue that I think is on everyone's lips in our markets right now are the potential cuts to SNAP funding and to Medicaid funding. And so I know the reconciliation process, there's a potential of up to $230 billion in cuts to SNAP. And our producers in the summer, some of them can earn up to 10% of their sales from people who are shopping using federal food assistance benefits. And so much is, it's not just the income, it's also what SNAP and direct authorization is tied to. It's tied to free and reduced school lunches, it's tied to all sorts of other authorizations in the state, and it's really concerning for, I think, food security, for tax and, you know, revenue for the state. And, you know, the fact is sort of like in the name of fraud or in the name of, you know, overpayments, things like that, is just totally mind-boggling, I think, because it's such a highly regulated program that requires a ton of authorization and backup and training. And so it's a scary time to be a grower, and it's a scary time to be shopping for groceries. So it's just really appreciate you being here to listen and for all of the work that you have done to really speak up for family farmers and domestic food production. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Murray, for being here and for hearing us and for the support over the years, who we've been very grateful for, and very grateful to my peers here for sharing their experiences, I share the same. My name is Edwin Pasaha, owner of Boom Boom and Coffee. We got into coffee to do coffee better, so sourcing, and there's only Ethiopia is the birthplace of coffee, and we source all of our coffee from Africa. And even if we were to do it domestically, we're limited to just Hawaii. And so there's not many options there for us. And you know, over the years, especially since the time we opened up our first location in Renton, we now have four and a fifth one coming. It's been based off of the support of goodwill of our community. And we're really intentional and careful about how we adjust pricing. Making knee-jerk, you know, changes that could impact them. Once again, we got into it to source and to do coffee better, and also reflected in our cafe spaces, what we do inside of our spaces,
and also what we do on outside, and we pay a high premium for the coffees that we bring in. We had to, over the pandemic, learn to diversify our business from just having the one retail location and, you know, a table at the front of our doors and, you know, serving coffee, to then saying, let's do online, let's start, you know, expand into a wholesale, to grocery stores and such. And so what happened over these last few years is really trying to say, okay, we need to sustain ourselves in different ways. But as we do so, those still principles that ground us are going to continue on. And so compostable bags, which was spoken to, sourcing from, you know, Taiwan and other places, we're immediately seeing all those costs. There aren't really other options for really here locally. And if there is one other in Canada, that's impossible, but we're still going to see the same thing there. We're also seeing that, of course, in our coffee as well. But then when we come into places now, as we've kind of said, okay, you know, apply these same approaches, paying these higher costs for your coffee and just the raw good for the producers to sustain them, now we have these additional costs. When it comes to places like grocery stores that we're selling to and to our partners, we're really hesitant about passing on those direct costs to them. And the most recent kind of experiences here in the last, you know, since the new administration's come in, was this fact kind of Colombia. Colombia is the third biggest exporter of coffee in the world, and that immediately sent prices for coffee just through the roof to the highest points that we've ever seen in that. And so immediately to start reflecting 25% to our customers, to our wholesale partners, it's too much to bear. And then as well as, you know, those principles that ground us. And if we look at kind of what, you know, has sustained most businesses here, or what most businesses are producing here, Puget Sound Business Journal had a great article at the end of last year where it spoke to, you know, an average business, food and beverage, let's say, produces about $1 million in revenue, but is only retaining about 1 to 3% of their bottom line, so about $15,000 at the end of the year. So with a $15,000 bottom line, really what do you have to, you know, that there's this thought that, you know, small business owners are living really well, but truth of the matter is that it's really, we're all burdened by debt from, you know, this ambitious desire to see our businesses grow and these crazy ideas and making the American dream a reality for ourselves, to then, you know, struggling through the pandemic. And once again, thank you for the support throughout the pandemic. But we are, and I think coined very well, I think, you know, it's really the feelings, the financial pains of the pandemic in the 2.0 version are being felt right now for small businesses. And it, you know, in every aspect. And so, appreciate you giving the ear. I think, you know, my peers have said so much, and I think that, you know, be repeating myself to Sandy again, they've said eloquently. And I'm hopeful to you and the position that you're in to continue to keep fighting for us. We're grateful.
Thank you.
I was just going to say we went short on time. Thank you all for coming here. Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
And we are here to help you help us, so tell us how we can.
This was really great. Your input was really amazing. I mean, obviously the tariffs are a topic of conversation impacting all of you, but all the rest of it here in the U District, when you're freezing funding or from NIH or reducing contracts, I mean, you've got fewer people coming to your stores, the farm impacts that people are seeing that increase your costs at the grocery store. I think just the fear and the chaos that all of you kind of talked about is made consumers step back too, which impacts you as well. And for me, the bottom line is you all make it through this. So I will do everything I can to help raise the profile of this issue. Congress can intervene, it takes legislation. We can take back the control of the tariffs, but we've got to fight hard on all the other cuts too. All the research cuts that are happening at the institutions that impact your customers and so much more. So this has been an amazing conversation. I want all of you to know I'm hearing you. I'm
going to
go back and
find her.
Make sure you stay there.
And we have just a few quick questions
for
us.
Hi, Senator. I'm Anna Edgerton. I'm the Seattle Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. And I was wondering if you could peel back the curtain a little bit on your conversations with Republican colleagues, because I'm sure to the extent that they are meeting with your constituents, they're hearing the same things. You know, these are not issues that are just affecting Democratic states. I know there was a tariff review bill that, you know, Chuck Grassley and several others signed on to, but you've been in the Senate a long time and have good relationships with a lot of your Republican colleagues. And is there any kind of recognition that these are shared challenges and there needs to be a kind of a shared response from Congress?
It's a really good question. And a number of my Republican colleagues, remember, he's only been president for 3 months.
Yes.
Want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I think that they are losing that, he's losing that credibility. There are seven Republican senators already signed on to the legislation that Senator Cantwell and Grassley have said that Congress has to approve any tariffs. We need a few more than that.
And the House as well.
And in the House as well. So that says to me they're going home and hearing what I'm hearing as well. They need the courage to stand up on this because we can't sustain this for much longer.
Mm-hmm. Is there any talk of kind of like COVID-like supports mitigate the impact? I know that's hard to do because industries are affected so differently.
Yeah, industries are affected differently. And I have not seen any Republican stand up and say we need COVID relief. Remember, that was huge, absolutely.
Sure.
Our business shut down. It was a huge impact across the country, and it was a bipartisan effort to step forward to provide relief. I don't see that on the horizon.
Yeah.
I wish. But the correct answer is reduce the chaos on these tariffs. Don't defund every grant and research institution out there. That's people, that's jobs, that's research, that's lives. Make sure that we bring stability back here. That's what will create a consumer who is confident moving forward and be able to sustain our small businesses.
And not do tariffs by IUBA.
King Fiber, KOW.
I have a question. During this recess, you've been speaking to business owners, not just on the app, but across Washington State, about how these tariffs are impacting them. Based on those conversations, you know, every business is being impacted by these tariffs a little bit differently, but are there overarching themes or recurring statements that you're hearing that indicate really how these tariffs are impacting Washington State business owners in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I think the overall feeling is businesses themselves are feeling the chaos of this by increased costs. When you increase costs, you reduce the amount of income that you have because you're paying that out. It's not like it's extra money for yourself. So a real fear from a lot of our small businesses in particular, but really across the state and I'm sure across the country, is how are they going to survive this? And the second thing I'm hearing, and you kind of heard a little bit of it here, is that this rhetoric about we're going to have these tariffs because we want the manufacturing here in the United States is actually doing the opposite right now. We are losing our manufacturing because of the tariffs, because obviously you can't sell your goods someplace else if they're not buying them.
Sorry, just a quick follow-up. President Trump has said that these tariffs are short-term pain for long-term gain in terms of American manufacturing. Has anything that you've heard, you know, in your conversation with business owners indicated that that's
I think the short, what the heck is short term? You know, 3 months? Nobody can do a business based on what might happen 3 months from now. They're paying the prices now. And I think the chaos that has been created, we are losing our partnerships with a lot of our trade partners around the globe. If China is no longer buying what we manufacture here, they're not stopping using it. They're buying it from somewhere else. So we lose that base of support. It's not going to come back in 3 months or a year, and they say, oh, glad you stop doing that. We'll come back and buy from you again. Apples, for example, they're looking elsewhere to purchase their apples, and we will not get that market back, and that's just one of many.
I want to get your reaction to some news that broke today. The International Monetary Fund just released their economic projections, saying that there's going to be, quote, a major negative shock to the global economy. And particularly that there's going to be slower growth and higher inflation here in the U.S., being one of the hardest hit countries despite us putting these tariffs out there. Do you expect that this will sway more of your Republican colleagues to speak out against the tariffs and possibly sway even those in the Trump administration?
Well, what you heard today at this small round table with just a few businesses is that's exactly true. What the IMF is saying is it's impacting our economy. I am hoping that our Republican colleagues hear the same. I'm certain they are, but they have the courage to take action against a president. To this point, they have not done so.
Do you think this report will have any weight in swaying people?
I hope so. It certainly, you know, makes us all go, oh, wow, this is real. This isn't just imagined. It's happening. Talking to business owners who are seeing on a daily basis, it's happening. Our country needs to get our economy back, and the first thing you do is reduce chaos. The second thing you do is quit, you know, all this chaotic thing of cutting funding, firing people, is creating a consumer backlash that is causing that. And we are creating enemies among our global partners. Canada, I just had a small business owner tell me a few days ago that Canada is where they purchase most of their things, and now the people that they're buying from are saying, it's not me, but I just, my country won't let me do that anymore. This is harming us.
Okay, great.